TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. It's hockey. All hockey. Hockey all the time. But not this time. Live from the Gold Eyes Annual Open House at Shaw Park, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Your chance to watch the fish warm up for the 2012 season and talk a little hockey with the Illegal Curve crew. Now from the concourse at Shaw Park, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra on TSN 1290.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at tsn.ca/Winnipeg, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined not in studio, but at Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, a beautiful day out here at Shaw Park. The Gold Eyes open house, the concourse and the stands are filled with people. Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Sound like Marv Levy, Drew. That's the old Marv Levy line before the Super Bowl. And they lost all four Super Bowls. So I'm a little worried that you lead with that. No, but it's a great day. It's gorgeous. It's packed. And there's kids. There's people of all ages. And, you know, you couldn't have opened the door this morning. You couldn't have asked for a better day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ezra has stolen 6 hot dogs by now. So yeah. Congratulations on that, Ezzy.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Drew. Sorry. I was never told that there was a limit of the amount of hot dogs I could eat. But, no, it's awesome. We're very thankful that the Gold Eyes asked us to do the show. Paul Edmonds is going to join us, and absolutely, you guys have already said it, but it really is a beautiful day, and it's a terrific turnout, and it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, and also talk a little bit about the Gold Eyes season coming up.
Got batting practice behind us.
Exactly, the crack of the bat going on right behind us here in our location at Shaw Park, so really just a tremendous day to come out, catch some baseball, talk some hockey, the whole nine yards. Let's start with last night in the NHL, where the Phoenix Coyotes defeated the Nashville Predators by a 1-0 margin last night in Game 4 of their Stanley Cup playoff, their Western Conference semifinal. You know, we're going to talk more about that series coming up a little bit later on, but what can you say about these Coyotes? They just keep winning by these 1-0 margins.
They keep winning, and Mike Smith seems to get more and more confident each and every game. You can talk about the Phoenix Coyotes and how well their forwards have played and the way they're playing Dave Tippett's system, but you just simply cannot... You cannot overlook the way Mike Smith has played. Yesterday, the Nashville Predators were clearly playing as if they were intimidated by him. I've never seen anything like it. You used to see teams get intimidated by a goalie like Dominic Hasek. But the Nashville Predators yesterday, a lot of the shots were from the outside. They were missing a lot of the net. Players like David Legwand, Sergei Kostets, and Patrick Hornquist, guys that are looked upon for offense, especially when Alexander Radulov and Andrei Kostets aren't in the lineup, they weren't getting it done. And, I mean, the Phoenix Coyotes are feeding off of that goaltending from Mike Smith.
The Nashville Predators, Drew, are a team that maybe some of us didn't take into account the fact that this team is playing as the favorite.
Right.
And they play as the favorite against Detroit, but it's still the Detroit Red Wings, like the New York Yankees. They're never really the underdog. And in this situation, they came in as the total favorite. This is the first time probably ever. When they loaded up with Forsberg and those guys years ago, they lost to San Jose in the first round. San Jose was a good team.
Yeah.
They played Detroit in the first round. Detroit was really the favorite because they're Detroit. At least the perception outside the city.
Well, if Detroit had won, nobody would be surprised.
Exactly. Right. This is the first series where people came in and thought Nashville was the clear-cut favorite. And I think that's one of the factors for the reasons why this team hasn't yet performed in the series. Obviously, Phoenix has played well. Obviously, Mike Smith has played well. But Nashville's pressure, and they have distractions. And this is a team that has generally always taken pride in maybe being the underdog and not having internal distractions. And there's no media pressure there.
No, well, not. I mean, they have a strong following, but
there's
not
no
like
media
playing,
pressure.
Right, it's not
different
like playing
than
in the
fan pressure.
Yeah, exactly right. It's not like playing in one of the larger markets. And we're going to talk more about those locker room distractions a little bit later on in the program. But you look at last night's game, and what I thought, and as you touched on it when you said that Nashville looked intimidated playing against Mike Smith, they weren't doing. You know, they dominated, I thought, the course of the game. I thought they had the puck in the Phoenix zone, and they controlled the flow of the game. But everything was they tried to make everything highlight reel and pretty beyond belief. They didn't think that they could beat Mike Smith with, you know, shot, rebound, attack the net, scramble. It was four-way passing plays, and that was the only way they thought they could score. They made it almost more difficult on themselves than it needed to be. And when we're joined by Tyson Nash a little bit later on in the program, we'll talk about that with him.
Boys, the Nashville Predators on home ice, down 2-1, came out, and they had a terrible first period. They had 5 shots on net in the first period. I believe no one on the team had more than 3 or 4 shots on net. They ended up with 20 or 21 shots on net. They didn't play a good home game. They weren't able to capitalize on any sustained pressure that they had in the Coyotes zone. The Phoenix Coyotes, when you play a game like that, it's easy for the Coyotes to win. There's a way that you beat the Phoenix Coyotes, and you have to use speed. You have to capitalize on your sustained pressure, and you have to be physical with them. But you look at guys like Boyd Gordon and Kyle Chipchura. They threw those guys out. They play 11 or 12 minutes a game. Yep. They play their defensive roles, and again, without Radulov and Andre Kostitsyn in the lineup, really, you've got 3 or 4 guys on the team that can put the puck in there.
That's just it. When you're a Phoenix team that defends and plays defense basically all game, and you really only have 3 to 4 to 5 guys at most. If you think about it, guys, like, who was their most dangerous forward last night? Hornquist? Leguan?
At times it was Brandon Yip.
That's the issue. Erat, you have all those guys. Sure, none of those guys are really over 60-point guys. At most.
Right.
It was probably Martin Erat.
So, yeah, you think about it, though. Martin Erat, I mean, for God's sake.
He's not striking fear into anyone's heart.
So there's nobody there that strikes fear into your heart.
Right.
And not that it's ever been the case for Nashville, they never made it past the second round. So nothing was striking fear. You have a Phoenix team that plays team defense against a team that doesn't have a game breaker. That's the issue with not having Radulov and Kostitsyn in the lineup. I mean, maybe against a different team it works differently, because if you're Nashville playing against Detroit, you're playing a defensive game, although Radulov and those guys played well against Detroit, but you're playing a defensive game and you need to counter.
Right.
But against Phoenix, who's playing a defensive game against you, you have the puck more. And when you have the puck more, you want to have offensive players having the puck more. I just thought that Trotz overthought it a bit.
Well, we'll talk about the locker room dynamic a little bit later on. I don't want to get into that right now because there's another game that
we
have.
I got lots to say on that.
And that's why I want to dedicate a whole segment to it coming up later in the program. But what we have right now is a very early start in Washington today for Game 4 of the Caps-Rangers series. First game since the triple overtime marathon from Thursday night. Mm-hmm. They're starting at 11:30 in Washington because it's Kentucky Derby Day in Louisville, Kentucky.
So they're going to cut away from this game like they cut away from the Albertson
overtime? Contingency plan that they have in place is double overtime. They're okay on NBC right up until double overtime. At the conclusion of double overtime is when they would have to cut away. Now, if they're going to play triple overtime 2 straight games, that would be hard to believe.
Yeah.
But anyways, Washington and the Rangers is underway. 2 minutes to go in the first period in Washington. Capitals with a 1-0 lead. Alex Ovechkin got the Caps on the scoreboard to start the game there, Game 4. We'll keep you up to date on that game as we go on here on the Legal Curve Hockey Show throughout the day today. One other game that's in action right now comes to us live from, I believe, Helsinki, Finland. That's where Team Canada is playing in the World Hockey Championships. They are up on the United States now by a 2-1 margin. The first goal of the game was scored by Winnipeg Jets player Jim Slater. That came in the first period. Answered by John Tavares, the New York Islanders. Yep. Andrew Ladd just got on the board for Team Canada. No, pardon me. Jeff Skinner. Jeff Skinner got on the board with an assist to John Tavares and Jane Bomeister. So in the second period in Helsinki, Finland, the score is 2-1 for Team Canada over Team USA now.
John Tavares, if you look at his stats, they posted them on TSN last night on SportsCenter with Jay and Dan. I think it was Dan. John Tavares' stats in any form of international competition are just unbelievable. They're otherworldly.
This is his third year in a row, as it is for Evander Kane. Who obviously hasn't made the playoffs with the Thrashers or the Jets yet. And, you know, great for Jimmy Slater to get the A for Team USA, but, you know, Canada won their first game over Slovakia. Andrew Ladd obviously got the goal.
Yep.
But, you know, this tournament's, you know, it's interesting to me, and you do have a lot at stake for Team Canada. Canada hasn't done well at this tournament, finished 5th last year, and I believe 7th the year before, and then before that they would always lose to Russia. In the gold medal game. And now you have the seeding for Team Canada. This tournament determines the seeding for the 2014 Olympics. Plus, you have guys like John Tavares, Evander Kane, Team Canada hopefuls. Even a guy like Andrew Ladd has said that, you know, he might be a long shot, but hey, it doesn't hurt to go over to Europe and play and prove to Team Canada what you can do.
You certainly, as you have that in the background, it's the people wanting to play for Team Canada because they want to make the Olympics, and more power to them.
Right.
And I think also Brent Setter. This is an audition for him.
That's right. He's the head coach for Team Canada.
Boucher.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, the problem is, you know, are you going to remove Lemaire retired. But the coaching staff for Team Canada for the Olympics 2010 was Mike Babcock, Lindy Ruff, and Ken Hitchcock.
And Hitchcock had just been fired, I believe.
Right. Hitchcock was upstairs.
Yeah.
And Lemaire. They probably want Hitchcock upstairs again. He's a little bit too negative.
And he's a great tactician.
So what you do is you leave Hitchcock upstairs. Babcock, probably the coach, we'll see. But for sure, because Lemaire has retired, that opens up another spot. So Boucher is there. Muller is there.
Yeah.
And you have Brent Setter. All those guys want to be a part of it. Yep. So it's not only the players, it's the coaches too. And obviously just the winning factor.
Absolutely. Don't forget for a second how, for the people who participate in the World Hockey Championships, you know, they've been eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, or they never made it. Team Canada looks very favorably on the guys that they can call over. Let's be honest, Duncan Keith doesn't really want to be there, but Duncan Keith wants to be there in Sochi.
Duncan Keith, I give more credit for, because Duncan Keith's like Jonathan Toews. He's going to be in Sochi.
Yeah.
He's just going. Him and Perry and Getzlaff are just going. They're probably all going to be there.
Yeah. Right.
The issue is like a guy like Evander Kane.
Absolutely.
A guy like Jeff Skinner.
He's a bubble player.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I would say right now he's even probably a bit of a long shot, but if things progress in the next couple of years.
Think about it in terms of Kane. You've played for the World Juniors.
Yeah.
You've played now three consecutive World Championships. You basically played at every opportunity that's available to you. I'm sure you played the under-16s. So you've played every opportunity. You're a fast guy. You're going to be playing on big ice.
Yep.
You're a fast guy with a good shot who can create his own offense. I think there might be a spot for him.
If he had turned down this offer,
it would hurt him.
It would definitely hurt him. So that's why the World Hockey Champion, they added another layer of another layer of intrigue this year.
For Jets fans, from a personal perspective, you get to see the player in a different environment with different talent level, and that helps.
Sure.
Because if you see Evander Kane playing all year with an Alexander Bermistrov, a Nick Antropov, a Brian Little, let's be honest, none of those guys are the same skill level as guys he's going to be playing with at this international competition. It gives you a better idea of what he can do with other players.
And if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger and Claude Noel, you're liking the fact, you mentioned Bermistrov, Richie, and Bermistrov is playing for Team Russia.
Yeah.
And then obviously we mentioned Jim Slater playing for Team USA. You love to see that these guys are playing in the spring. Because these are all obviously all competitive guys, and you love to see that because you know that some of the guys are going to get a little bit rusty and go on vacation and you know these guys are taking the opportunity and representing their country. And you know, we had Chris Mason on the show last year. He played for Team Canada at the World Hockey Championships, and he said every time that they asked him, he would always jump at the opportunity to play for Team Canada. And it really is an awesome tournament. People don't realize that in Europe. This is the equivalent to the Olympics. In Europe, this is a huge tournament.
It is.
The problem in Europe, though, is they've priced out the regular fan.
Apparently, they just announced today that they're lowering the tickets in Stockholm because there was such an outrage over how expensive they were.
One of our friends was in Copenhagen a couple of years back and was going to go visit him, considering visiting him, and looked at the prices because they were playing in Sweden, I think, for that World Championships a couple of years ago.
Sure.
$300, $200, whatever dollars for one game. It's crazy.
You can't go to that. Nobody's going to pay that. But that's why apparently there was some of the criticism for this year as well, and they just announced that they are lowering the tickets. Let's get ready to go to break. We are going to spend more time on the World Hockey Championships later on in the program. Yeah. A quick update. In Washington, they've gone to the first intermission, 1-0 Caps over the Rangers. The Rangers outshot the Caps 14-3. In that first period.
Not surprising.
Well, that's a pretty lopsided shot total. And back in Helsinki, Jack Johnson has scored for the Team USA. 2-2 Canada, U.S. We'll keep you updated on that throughout the game.
Interestingly, he's the captain.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He is the captain of Team USA there. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Rangers Capital Series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on location from the Gold Eyes Open House at Shaw Park. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. Carbone is also the official sponsor of the Illegal Curve OT Pool, which is hugely popular on Twitter. Anytime a game goes into overtime, send us your one selection from only one team. If you get the right pick, you're going to win some great illegal curve prizes or some great prizes also from our official sponsor, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza.
New York and Washington.
Talk about the Rangers-Capitals series, this segment. So far, we had that was the longest playoff game in a long while. Certainly the longest of this playoff series. Thursday night, triple overtime. You know, both teams, it wasn't the most exciting dynamic game. But anytime a game goes to triple overtime, just by default, it's entertaining.
Ezzy and I were watching that game together. We didn't invite you, but...
Understandably.
And Ezzy leaned over to me in the middle of the second overtime, and he leaned over to me, are either of these teams trying to score? And that's kind of what it felt like, Drew. I mean, you have Dale Hunter really instilling a defensive conscience and defensive mindset with the Washington Capitals. And you have John Tortorella's team, who's never really going to outscore you, you know, by a considerable margin. And all you had there in that overtime, that game in general, was just a result of fatigue. The result was just a fatigue at the end of the game.
Yeah.
It wasn't a crisp, amazing offensive play. Obviously, Gabrick and Richards worked well on that play, and they worked quick to get the puck in front. But had that happened in the third period, it probably would have been intercepted by a Capitals defender. This series is really which goaltender will blink first. Because the teams are playing as teams. There isn't an overwhelming amount of offensive creation, meaning there's some talent there, but the teams aren't taking the chances to create the opportunities.
Right.
Because the coaches...
Neither team plays an aggressive style.
Right. So what happens is you're just playing, and you're playing for a defensive breakdown and for a goaltender mishap. And you know, for example, the first goal in the period today was Ovechkin's shot from just inside the blue line that Lundqvist probably should have had. Nothing was really created.
Right.
Lundqvist shot it. Girardi went to block it. He missed it, and it went top corner. But... Yeah. Overall,
traffic in front of him, and it went. It was a seeing eye goal, as the
New Jersey and Philly series has been more exciting that way.
The
Rangers Washington series has been boring.
Well, you know, you talk about whether or not each team wants.
Unless you
to
enjoy
score.
Shot blocking. For shot blocking, it's been the best series you'll ever.
Put as much time into offense as they did shot blocking, we'd actually have watchable hockey.
This series has been extremely tight, and we shouldn't have expected any less because the Washington Boston series was the first series ever that every game was decided by one goal, and that overtime it was clearly two teams that could have played for six periods. And we talked about it last week when we were previewing the series, Drew. The New York Rangers are arguably the best 5-on-5 team, and they're made for a 5-on-5 overtime. And they, in my opinion, they controlled the play in overtime, but it wasn't a landslide, if you want to call it that. And I was actually a little bit surprised because the New York Rangers can open the game up. A guy like Marian Gaborik in overtime, he got the goal, but with his speed, he's a guy that you could see that could open up the ice. And, you know, Washington's up right now 1-0 in game four, but this is an extremely tight series, and Braden Holtby's been great. Henrik Lundqvist is always good. And it's coming down to the small details and those matchups. And, for instance, a guy like Roman Hamrelik has been taken advantage of by the New York Rangers second line.
We talked about that
being
before
Ryan,
the series.
Right, Ryan Callahan, Chris Kreider, and Derek Stepan. And that's going ahead. That's a matchup that I think is going to work in the Rangers' favor. This is a very tight series, though, and you know we could see a couple more overtimes easily in the next few games.
So, as an aside, you see the way Chris Kreider is playing in the offer that the Rangers put forth for Rick Nash prior to the deadline. Scott Housen's once again looking foolish
in not accepting Chris Kreider.
Amongst four other prospects.
Right. Well, Chris Kreider appears to be this is his first NHL action. He, just graduated from Boston College.
Yep.
And is now, relatively seamlessly into that Rangers lineup.
The amazing thing about Chris Kreider is he's a smart player, but it's his speed, Drew. So he's at an advantage at all times, really, because he can put pressure on the opposing team, especially a defense that's logging guys like Jeff Schultz and Roman Hamrelik, guys who aren't fleet of foot, guys who can't keep up, guys who have to back off the line and cut off the angles to defend guys like Chris Kreider.
Do you think it would be to the Rangers' advantage to... I mean, they play such a structured system.
They're not changing anything.
I mean, I know they're not.
The Capitals would be their advantage to play Ovechkin more, play him with Semin, put more talent on him, make the Rangers defend a little bit more, put the pressure on them. And the problem is, you know, if you have a guy like Ovechkin, you have to make sure Neil Greenberg said this last week, you have to make the other team defend him.
Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post, he was on the show last week.
You have to make them defend him, and he's just not playing. You got to play him a ton. And you have to make the Rangers adjust. And granted, you're taking a coin flip, and everything Dale Hunter seems to be doing is working out. But that's more attributable to me to Braden Holtby than anything else. He's been brilliant. He's been nothing short of brilliant. And I think that if you had one of the other Vokun or whoever else in net playing their usual style all year, you probably wouldn't be in this position right now.
We're down live at Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes open house. That's Richard Pollock. That's Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Batting practice is underway right behind us, so you might hear the crack of the bat in the background. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Are we going to be joined by Paul Edmonds right now? Paul, are you going to jump on here with us? Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, going to jump on with us throughout the broadcast here from Shaw Park. Paul, we're talking about the Rangers-Cap series a little bit.
I haven't watched much of that one yet, just for obvious reasons.
A little bit busy this time of year for you?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. I really kind of thought that the Rangers were going to get, once they got through Ottawa on that tough series, though, that they were going to have their way with Washington. And Washington seemed to find a way to be competitive, especially with, as my son said the other day, why is Alex Ovechkin playing defense, Dad? And I said, only because he plays there on the power play, and he's pretty dynamic back there up top, and he can move the puck and he can shoot, so he's always a threat. But, you know, I know one of you guys had a bit of a run-in with John Tortorella, and really you're nobody
we
in
won't
this
say
business
who. No.
Until you've been stiffed by Stan Fischler and you guys have been done, that's happened, or you've had a run-in with John Tortorella. And
it's our bucket list.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't know what it is. The guy grates on me. I can't cheer for the Rangers because of him. Yeah. Although there's some good players that I like watching. I like watching Delzato on the backhand. I think he moves the puck really well. And there's some guys, there's some talent there for sure. But there's just something in me that says I don't want John Tortorella to win, because that would just really admonish all of the bad things he's done to the media. And, you know, Larry Brooks would have a field day with it, too, I'm sure.
Oh, he sure would. Yeah, undoubtedly he would. Well, there was and we'll talk, actually, we have it for the later on in the program, but the reporter, I can't remember the name, I'll look it up, who actually asked Tortorella, you know, why are you this way? He asked them this week, and they had a back and forth about it. You know, what is it about us that makes you, you know, such a jerk, for lack of better word? And Tortorella's like, you know, I'm not going to stand here and you know, have to defend my actions. You know, so it was an interesting back and forth between the two. But we'll talk about the responsibility that a head coach has to the media.
Well, I'll say one thing. What Tortorella does works if you win. If you don't win, it grows. It's a tired act.
If the Rangers were not winning, locker room would have such discord in it. Because a guy like Marian Gaborik, who's a creative guy, Brad Richards, creative guys. I mean, Brad Richards is a Tortorella disciple. He knows him back from his Tampa days. But you can't tell me that Marian Gaborik can't stand the fact that his creativity has been stifled under John Tortorella.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And guys like Ryan Callahan Mark Stahl and those guys, and you mentioned Brad Richards, who obviously had the relationship with him in Tampa, and the leadership group will tell you that they like playing him for Tortorella, because he is a player's coach, and he is a guy that he won't mince words, and he'll tell you like it is. But you're absolutely right. He's got them to play a certain brand of hockey, and guys like Gaborik haven't opened up the series. I agree with Paul. I mean, the Rangers just barely got out of that Senators series. The Senators outplayed them.
They did.
Many games. And, you know,
Game 7 of
the Rangers and the Capitals are almost in a stalemate situation. And it is old-time hockey, and there are a few scoring chances. But a guy like Gaborik, you have to wonder if he can't get going, who else on that team is going to be getting your goals? Because remember, guys like Ryan Callahan and Derek Stepan, these guys are still young, and they're not.
That's why Washington should try to be outscoring this team, because they can't score a lot. But they're not. They're trying to out-defend them, which doesn't really make sense.
And I disagree. I think the Rangers should be opening it up a little bit more to take advantage of the let's call them slow players that the Caps have on the back end. Take advantage of a Roman Hamrlik. Like, take advantage of a Schultz.
Washington has too much counter speed, though. That would cost them. It would cost them. Washington would counter the turnovers that they're trying to, when they're trying to create offense, and they would be able to take it in. And I think Washington is letting the Rangers dictate it too much. And Dale Hunter seems to be working. So who are we to say?
Well, it's going to be a 7-game series where it comes down to a 1-goal game in Game 7. And, you know, when it's a 1-goal game in Game 7, it can be a fluke play. And that could be what ends up killing the Rangers.
As a coach, you look
a lot
better when you play not to lose. Because if you lose by 1 goal, you say all the bounces. As opposed to trying to play to win by 2.
I just have one question for you guys that I've been thinking about, because obviously I was in Washington with Brian and the crew, and we did a game with the Jets, And it was quite a compelling game. The Jets came back to win that night, the last one there. Their backs were against the wall when it came to postseason playoff berth. And there was a lot of talk about Dale Hunter, and he wasn't really that engaged to the media, and they wondered about sort of his sustainability within that organization. If they have a long march and they get past the Rangers, right, and they get into the conference final, and maybe they get through that, because anything can happen. You can catch lightning in a bottle. You get a good goaltender. Ovechkin starts to play out of his mind, all those sorts of things. Now, what happens with Dale Hunter? I mean, the longer they go, the more questions I have as to whether he's going to be back next year, right, or if he goes back to London.
Right.
Because he was sort of just airdropped in here, yep, take over. I mean, Ted Leonsis was sort of pleading with him to take the job. He did. Yeah. It's maybe a favor. Now, does he want to stay at the NHL? Does he want to go back to London? I mean, there's all sorts of questions here. And the deeper that the Caps get into the postseason, the more questions and the more compelling those questions become about Dale Hunter's status with the Washington Capitals.
Two things. Every coach should have the leverage Dale Hunter has,
exactly,
in making millions of dollars in London and not caring and coaching like he doesn't care. Because the players know he doesn't care.
Right.
And they can't really fight back. Second, he needs to buy another suit if he comes back next year. Because he only owns one suit, and he wears it the same suit every game.
He might be able to get a couple from Claude Noel, because Claude got a couple suits towards the end of the season. But, Paul, I agree with you. You know, Dale Hunter, what he's done, and let's be honest, Washington limped into the playoffs.
Yeah, man.
And they had such a disappointing season. A lot of us here picked the Capitals to win the East, and then they limped in. And now he's done what Bruce Boudreau couldn't do. He's taken them to the next level. They've gotten out of the first round, and now they're competing with New York. So I agree with you. If you're Ted Leonsis and if you're George McPhee, you want desperately for Dale Hunter to stay as coach, because he's got them further than Bruce Boudreau ever did. So I agree with you. There's a lot of question marks there.
He's certainly playing with house money, as the expression goes.
Yep.
We're down at Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Goldeyes. It is the Winnipeg Goldeyes open house, batting practice is going on behind us. The concourses are filled. The stands are filled. Come on down. A beautiful afternoon here in Winnipeg. Paul Edmonds, you're going to be back with us a little bit later on in the program.
I'll see you guys about 1:25.
Terrific. Great. We'll look forward
to that.
Thanks
for coming down, guys.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for having us.
Exactly. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on
TSN. Rangers just tied it up.
Rangers just tied it up.
Anisimov, I believe.
Yeah. There you go. Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. We're coming to you today live from Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, for the Goldeyes annual open house. Batting practice going on behind us. The sun is shining in the stands, and the concourse is full of people. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
New Jersey and Philadelphia.
Before we get to Jersey Philly, Rangers tied it up, as you mentioned. It was Artem Anisimov scoring for the Rangers in the second period. It was interesting, as he'd just been yelled at by Rangers head coach John Tortorella in the first period. There was it was caught on camera, so it was quite visible. And he comes back and he obviously responds to Tortorella's encouragement. 1-1 Rangers and Caps, 15 minutes to go in the second period. And in Helsinki, Finland, it is 2-2 between Canada and the U.S. At the end of 40 minutes. Flyers Devils is probably, by my estimation, been the most entertaining the second round series.
Simply because of the Bob Cole factor.
Well, you love Bob Cole.
He's been on this year. It's a renaissance.
No, but it has been the most entertaining series.
Sure.
We've had
two aggressive teams that play an aggressive style.
Absolutely. Yes, and we've obviously had two shutouts in the Nashville Phoenix series. Washington Rangers has been low scoring. Yeah. There was the triple OT, but absolutely, Drew, you've got close state rivals, Philadelphia practices in New Jersey. These are two teams that play each other six times a year in the Atlantic Division.
Yes,
and you know what?
Exactly,
the New Jersey Devils, you know, they
familiarity breeds contempt.
Absolutely. And game two.
Who said that yesterday? Somebody said, it was Shane Doan. It's true, though. Familiarity does breed contempt. But we've been talking about the Devils all year. Mm-hmm. And if you've been listening to our show, you would know that we've talked about debunking the idea, and the Devils' guests have said the same, that the Devils are the old team of trapping and sitting back.
They
don't do that anymore.
They're not Jacques Lemaire's Devils.
No.
And they haven't been. I mean, Peter DeBoer is playing a very aggressive. We saw the Devils three out of the four times against
right
the
now.
Jets this
yes.
year. Right, we saw them once down
in
New Jersey.
Yes.
And they play an aggressive and upbeat and energetic style, and they forecheck. They're a hard forechecking team.
The Devils, Peter DeBoer.
He deserves some credit. He's not getting enough credit for what
That's
he's
exactly
done
right.
with this team.
This is what happened with Pittsburgh and Philly. Pittsburgh didn't take the puck below the hash marks, work them, make Philly want to defend. And two things. A, use their speed to an advantage, which Pittsburgh had, and wear down the Philly defense, use their speed, and make Philly defend. Because as good as Philly is offensively, and they have some good defensive players, overall as a team, they don't want to defend that much, and they get lazy. The Devils are doing just that. They're sticking to a game plan, and that's a cliche, but this game plan is a better game plan than one Dan Bylsma either put into place or had his players affect. And this is what happened. The Devils have been working them below the hash marks.
Yep.
Zajac has looked amazing. Parise has been the best player in any series so far as I'm concerned. And they keep working, and they have the three lions, and they have the size of a Ponikarovsky and a Zajac, the speed of a Parise, the sense, an idea of an Elias, and they keep working, and they keep getting the puck in deep, and they keep wearing on Philly and making them defend. And Philly, without the mistakes in the neutral zone and without being worked behind the net, what's happening now is they're forced to start their rushes from way back in their own zone, too. So there's so many factors here. And Pete DeBoer and Lou Lamoriello, who probably had a role in this as well, Adam Oates,
yeah.
Larry Robinson, just a tremendous job.
In game two, sure. I'll just say this quickly,
go ahead, Drew.
In game two, the New Jersey Devils utterly dominated the Philadelphia Flyers. And I thought that was Ilya Brizgalov's best period of the playoffs, including the first round. And obviously, his goals against was very high.
If he wasn't terrific that period, it would have been, the Devils
absolutely
would have had five goals.
And it was 4-1, and they deserved to win 8-1.
Yeah.
And Richie is right. You look at that coaching staff, Pete DeBoer, Adam Oates, and Larry Robinson. And in game two, when the Devils were struggling to score a goal, Larry Robinson tapped Adam Larson on the back. And by the way, that was Larson's first game of the 2012 Stanley Cup playoffs. And Richie, correctly, when we had Matty Loughlin on last week, asked Matty Loughlin, you know, should they be putting Adam Larson in? Because they've got Peter Harold, who came up from the AHL and didn't really play that much and then started to play a lot in the first round. And he ended up going in because Kovalchuk had the lower body back injury.
Mm-hmm.
So Larson got in, and now he's in. And what happens? Larson gets the goal to tie the game up.
He looked overwhelmed for about the first 10 minutes of that game, and then he settled down, and he realized it's hockey.
You got a Hall of Famer telling a guy who's young and who has a bright career ahead of him. I think Adam Larson, it's going to take him a few years, but you can see he's going to be a great puck-rushing defenseman.
He's an 18-year-old defenseman playing significant minutes in the NHL right now.
Playing in the World Juniors against Canada and that atmosphere has certainly helped him adjust to this. There's no question about that.
No, absolutely.
They were very happy to take him. The Devils, and I asked this to Tom Giulitti. Remus and I and Kyle were at the draft, and I was talking to Tom Giulitti, who writes for the Bergen Record we've had on the show before, about Adam Larson, and he said that Lamoriello was elated to take Adam Larson fourth overall.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, you're
getting... It's like Montreal this year, though, because they're really not as bad as their record was,
right?
Montreal, they have enough talent in the system. And they get to draft third overall, and New Jersey get to draft top five last year, and then they go back to being what they are. It's always a nice benefit for them. Now, another thing we haven't talked about, though, is... Well, first of all, mentioning guys like Steven Gionta, I mean, Burton Carter, those guys have been working really well.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of what Philly isn't doing, and the credit needs to go to New Jersey, too. But Travis Zajac, if you watched at the end of the season when he came back, and he tried to come back a number of times from his injury, you watched at the end of the season, he didn't have the burst, he didn't have the takeoff, he didn't have the acceleration. It was a great benefit to the Devils to have him come back for those last few games because he worked the kinks out. And as the playoffs have gone on,
He's gotten better.
And I think that's a direct result of his injury and getting into better game shape and things like
that. Is he leading the NHL in points in the playoffs right at this point?
I don't know.
I think Giroux still is.
Remus,
he's leading the Devils, Drew. And you know what? Back to Pete DeBoer. He was a coach for the Kitchener Rangers and obviously the Panthers. He couldn't take the Panthers into the playoffs.
He didn't have the talent,
but he's got this Devils team playing very well. And what I liked in game one, when Ilya Kovalchuk was healthy, even though he wasn't healthy, let's be honest, he was injured. Yeah. He's been injured for a while.
That's why I want to talk about how remarkable his performance has been in game three.
That game-winning goal that Ponikarovsky scored.
Supposedly, he's got a herniated disc in his back, and he was the best player on the ice.
We talked about him
and Parise were 1-2 in terms of the best players for the Devils.
And you know, anybody who listens to the Legal Curve Hockey Show will know that I've loved the Devils and all that.
You picked them.
And they've been one of the greatest teams up there with the Detroit Red Wings. But I didn't just pick them out of my own bias. I mean, I knew that if this team was going to win, it would have to be because Zach Parise, Ilya Kovalchuk, Patrick Eliash were going to outplay Claude Giroux, Danny Briere, and Scott Hartnell. And that's what they've done.
They've outplayed Hartnell
top players
and Giroux.
Are they exposing the Flyers' defense for being Are they exposing it for not being as deep as people maybe thought it was after the Pittsburgh series?
No, yeah, absolutely. I think they're doing that. I think a lot of this burden also falls on the Flyers' forwards for not only not producing offensively enough, but also not defending enough. Because one of the biggest strengths, I think the Flyers were more motivated, but what happened with the Flyers was, when they were in the last series, the forwards were back pressuring so well to make up for it. Back pressure means back checking to allow the slower Flyers defenders to meet the players at the line and then defend. What's happening now is they're getting lazy.
They're not hustling, so that the Flyers' defense have to go one-on-one against the charging forwards.
Exactly, and also it's below the hash marks. And defending. And so
and it's a lot harder to defend below the hash
exactly.
marks where you're getting pounded
exactly.
than it is to defend
exactly.
up at the blue line where it's just a pond hockey
so
game.
What the Flyers need to do is, this is a motivational issue because the talent is all there. This is a motivational issue. The Flyers need to be as motivated to beat New Jersey as they were to beat Pittsburgh because the talent is there. And to me, it's still their series to lose because, you know, they're not one game from elimination now. It's still their series to lose. But what happens is right now, you're obviously on the road. And New Jersey's going to get a matchup issue if they want it. They really want to get it.
Right. It's matchup because they have the last change.
And so there's that factor. And we also haven't even mentioned, guys. I mean, Brizgalov's been a lot better than he was in the first round.
Absolutely.
A 40-year-old Marty Brodeur.
He hasn't been dynamite, but he's making some key saves when he needs to make them.
You don't need him to be dynamite because they never expected him to be dynamite. All you need him to do is not lose.
Right.
What's happened, Drew, and this goes back to the aggression. With the Devils are now all about aggressive forechecking. They don't have the guys that can lug the puck up like they used to. There is no Rafalski.
That's right. That's
there
right.
is no Niedermeyer.
Exactly
You've
right.
got the defensive guys now. You've got Bryce Salvador, Anton Volchenkov. Sidlicky is, I think, a very good puck-rushing defenseman. But aside from him,
right.
Andy Green, he's good.
His addition was important on the power play.
But
he's facilitating from the top of the blue line.
You get that puck out quickly, and you get in there, and you use all of your speedy forwards. David Clarkson, Dania Zubris. These guys can cycle the puck, and they can get on you.
And big and strong, both of them.
The Philadelphia Flyers, they don't have the puck. I mean, they need the puck. They need to get it to Giroux. They need to get it to Briere. And a guy like Jaromir Jagr has been completely neutralized, and that's why they dropped him off the first line.
Pittsburgh did this, exactly what the Devils are doing for the first half of the first game, and for some reason got away from it. And the Devils are sticking to what they're supposed to be doing. And it's not always the most fun way to play, Drew.
But when you're playing, if you're a player and you're playing an aggressive forechecking style, you're okay with that. You'd rather play this style than the style that Washington or the Rangers are playing.
Oh, for sure.
It's not pond hockey like the Flyers and Penguins was.
Exactly.
But this is a style that is relatively enjoyable to play and will prove to be successful, or at least it has proven to be successful through the first three games of this series.
Now the Flyers, though, I felt like they always thought their back was up against the wall against Pittsburgh. Do they now pump their game up because their back is against the wall now?
How much of a factor, and quickly, because we're right up against it to go to break, how much of a factor do you think the lack of a heat-on for the Devils that they had against Pittsburgh has affected Philly?
The Devils said from the onset, we're not engaging them in after-the-whistle activities, and they've stuck true to their word. As Don Cherry's mentioned, Washington did that with Boston. You don't want to wake that sleeping giant. Because the Flyers, and Boston, they get off on that kind of behavior.
Yep.
And if you don't engage them, then that element of an advantage, that element of their game and that advantage they get from that ceases to exist.
Maybe if the Devils put Pittsburgh Penguins jerseys on,
Philly would hate him a little bit more. Before we go to break, a quick update from Washington. 10 minutes to go in the second period. The Caps and the Rangers are still deadlocked at one. And in Helsinki, Finland, just at the start of the third period, it is now 3-2 for the United States. They just scored. Patrick Dwyer, shorthanded, has scored for the United States to make it 3-2 over Team Canada in the World Hockey Championships.
Patty Dwyer, by the way, very good penalty killer. Yeah.
Well, he proved it.
Somebody like that would not be a bad addition for the Jets.
Well, there you go. He just proved it in Helsinki. 3-2 Team USA versus Team Canada. We're live at Shaw Park. The Gold Eyes open house is taking place. Batting practice behind us. Fans everywhere. Come down and say hello. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're coming to you live today from the Winnipeg Gold Eyes open house at Shaw Park. Just an absolutely beautiful day, splendid day for some baseball. Come to see the team. They're practicing, taking some batting practice. Walk the concourses, get some mini donuts. Can somebody bring us some mini donuts? I could use some mini donuts.
Yeah. I could use some mini donuts, but I'd like to take this opportunity to wish a very happy birthday to Kyle Kozier.
Yes.
Oh, is it IC Kyle K's birthday?
It is Kyle Kozier's birthday. He's obviously a huge part of a legal curve. And
our Minnesota representative.
He's our Minnesota representative. And happy birthday to Kyle and his wife Amanda and, of course, little Archie.
Baby Archie, exactly. Yep. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill. Some new renovations took place at Cheer. Fabulous looking right at this point in time. You know, some new big screens. We spent all the, that was our home away from home for all the Jets road games this
year.
Sure
was, yeah.
Playoffs are still going strong there at the Cheer. Did some great renovations. TVs everywhere. Come check out the great new look at the Cheer Bar and Grill located at the corner of Stradbrook and Osborne in the heart of Osborne Village.
We're going to try to set something up. I talked to Brian, and what we're going to try to do is set up a draft party there.
Oh, good idea.
For the Jets draft picks. So
good idea.
Look forward
good
to
idea.
That. Get your Jets jerseys out, and we're going to have a draft party. The draft is in Pittsburgh. Remus and I were there last year, as everybody knows. Unfortunately, we're not going to go there.
Unfortunately, you've been banned by the NHL for this year.
Gary Bettman wrote us a personal letter.
Yeah. But we got Hustler and Lawless going. So.
That's right, exactly. So stay tuned for all that information. Of course, we'll have you covered entirely on the NHL entry draft here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A quick update from Washington, where the Capitals have retaken the lead on the New York Rangers, 2-1, the Capitals over the Rangers with 7 minutes to go in the second period. Nicholas Backstrom with the goal. Richie, he made a big hit.
He got the puck in the corner, in the right corner of the offensive zone. He fended off a Ranger forward who fell down because Backstrom's really strong. Tossed the puck behind the corner to cycle and curled back in front. And Chimera, who's behind the net, received the pass, put it back to Backstrom in front. But a beautiful shot through both of shot blocker, who looked like Girardi, might have been Girardi. No, it wasn't Girardi. It was, I think, Bickle. And I couldn't really tell. And then past Lundqvist. What we're seeing quickly before we get into the Habs talk is Ovechkin scoring. And you watch the three overtime games, and I kept saying to Ezzy, where are the game breakers here?
Yep.
These are the game breakers. These guys are unbelievably talented. If these guys get going, maybe they get more ice time because of it. You make the Rangers defend, which we're talking about. These are two of the best players in the league. Make him defend.
And these were guys that were the most dominant players in the first few years after the lockout.
That's right.
You know, they've split them up, and, you know, that's a strategy. I thought that worked when they split Kovalchuk up off of the top line in New Jersey, but I'm not so sure that those guys should be split up. But obviously, today they're getting goals, and, you know, speaking of Philly having their backs against the walls, Washington has their back against the wall. It's going to be tough if they go down 3-1 to come back in the Rangers.
Yeah.
They're not the type of team I would see coming back from three games.
Two or three
Nashville,
games in New
on the
York
other
too.
Hand, I could see coming back on Phoenix.
Quick update from Helsinki. Evander Kane just scored for Team Canada, tying that game up at 3. Probably about 10 minutes to go in Helsinki. Team Canada 3, Team USA 3. Evander Kane of the Winnipeg Jets.
And it wasn't assisted by Brian Little and Blake Wheeler, of course, because they're not in that tournament. But we talked about Evander Kane before. You know, this is his third World Hockey Championship in a row. He played for the Thrashers. When he was playing for the Thrashers, I should say, played for Team Canada. He's a guy, Richie said he could be on that big ice in Sochi. I have to agree. I mean, Evander Kane this year, in his third year in the NHL, popped in 31 goals, and he's got tremendous speed. Great junior player. When he played for Team Canada at the World Junior Hockey Championships, produced a lot of points when he was back, when he was a Vancouver Giant.
Yeah.
So, good for Kane.
Yeah, on that ice surface, he should be a dangerous player,
proved it. Because he always likes to go wide, and you have more room to go wide.
Exactly right. So 3-3 in Helsinki between Canada and the U.S. Let's talk about the Montreal Canadiens' new general manager. That's Marc Bergevin. Yep. Next segment, we're going to be joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette to talk about a little bit more. Pat's, of course, on the ground there in Montreal. But, you know, when you heard Bergevin is going to get the job, what was your sort of immediate thought about it?
I wasn't overly surprised, Drew. Marc Bergevin is well thought of in hockey circles. As a quick aside, it's interesting to note how many guys have been hired away from Chicago. Now you have Dale Tallon, you have Rick Dudley. So Rick Dudley left Chicago to go take Atlanta's GM spot.
Yep. Right.
So that's one guy. Then Tallon leaves and goes to Florida, gets fired, leaves, goes to Florida. That's two guys. Then Shevel Dayoff comes to Winnipeg.
Yep.
That's three guys. Then Marc Bergevin comes to Montreal. That's four guys. And Stan Bowman goes to get elevated. That's five guys. I have a hard time believing that five guys were responsible for the blossoming of the Chicago Blackhawks and the success. So the question is, which one of these guys was responsible for it, or which of them, and which wasn't. And maybe through these new jobs, we'll get to see.
It doesn't strike me. I mean, the Blackhawks organization's a good one, but you know, it's easy to be a good organization when you draft in the top five for a number of years, like you did to get Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews.
Yeah.
You know, it. Good organization, but I'm not sure, like you just said, why they're worthy of having having such a sort of a route to every general manager job that now exists in the NHL.
It's just interesting. I mean, obviously they have nice trades. They get Patrick Sharp from Philly. They can draft guys like Buffington late, and they can get guys like Versteeg, and they can draft Seabrooks and Keyes. Who's responsible for that? Are any of those guys responsible for that? So there's all those issues that go along with it. But I have a hard time believing that five guys were responsible for it. Time will tell, really, which guys were.
Right.
In terms of Bergevin, he is thought of to have a very good... first of all, he's able to... First things first, he's able to handle the Montreal media.
Right.
And that you need to be pre-qualified. Because you can't even be considered unless you can do that. So he can do that.
Absolutely.
He's got a good sense of humor, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
He can. He seems to have a good understanding of the idea of... In this day and age, it's not a GM and a secretary and somebody else. It's a huge operation. He seems willing to engage and have everybody's opinion taken into account. And he's a hockey mind, so he knows the game. He's played the game. He knows the game. He's built up a lot of contacts over the years. He's
not insular.
And he's studied under people before, Scotty Bowman, Joel Quimble, he mentioned, Al Arbour, and then obviously in the Chicago management. It's not just jumping into it. Surrounded with the proper individuals, I think Bergevin could do a very good job. I have no issue with the hire at all. I would have picked Brisebois.
Julien Brisebois,
that doesn't mean
the assistant general manager in Tampa.
Because that doesn't mean that they're both not qualified.
Right. I mean, half the job of the general manager in Montreal, probably even more than half the job, is being a PR guy. And that's where, and that's exactly
Pierre Gauthier
where Pierre Gauthier failed.
He was a ghost.
Well, he was a ghost, and when he spoke, he wasn't comfortable, he didn't like it.
If you read the Gazette the next day after the hire, you read Mike Boone and Dave Stubbs and Pat Hickey, who are having next segment, obviously, Jack Todd.
Yep.
The prevailing theme was that Mark Bergevin made more jokes in his 20-minute press conference than Bob Gainey and Pierre Gauthier did for their entire tenure for the last 10 years of the Montreal Canadiens.
Right. Richie, he's a very personable guy, and everything that we've been told is that Jeff Molson and Serge Savard did an extensive search. Because following up Pierre Gauthier, towards the end it got ugly in Montreal. Last year was an ugly year in Montreal. And we're led to believe that Montreal looked at a lot of guys. And these names have been bandied about. Julien Brisebois, mm-hmm. Pierre Maguire, Claude Loisel. And they selected Mark Bergevin. And Mark Bergevin is a guy that was a journeyman defenseman and a guy that has a good mind for hockey talent, hockey evaluation. And he's a guy that they think can come in and turn this team around quickly. This isn't a team that is an Edmonton.
No.
I mean, they've got some pieces there. I mean, obviously, P.K. Subban, the injury, they're going to watch that carefully, and that's not good. But, you know, you look at who they've got, and Carey Price and P.K. Subban, they're going to build
Pacioretty,
a team around them. And Pacioretty. And they've
Emelin.
And, you know, they're not going to be a last-place team next year,
no,
in my opinion.
No.
They're
not a
team...
too much talent.
They took a step back, but they took a step way back because of everything that went on.
Which, by the way, is not such a bad thing to take a step all the way back. Like you just said about the New Jersey Devils, they weren't a bottom-four team.
They're going to have they're going to have a chance to get a Galchenyuk or a Philip Forsberg or maybe even a Grigorenko. So they're going to get a high draft pick, and they really identified Bergevin. And I know that the Montreal Canadiens, this time around, when you have a guy like Serge Savard, who was the former GM and obviously one of the best defensemen to ever play for the Montreal Canadiens, they identified their guy. Much like True North identified Cheveldayoff, and they interviewed guys. They like Bergevin because
And one of the guys they interviewed was Bergevin.
Rangers just scored 3-2.
Rangers 3...
Or is that a replay? No, that's a goal.
Not 3-2.
Yeah.
Did they score two goals?
Oh, sorry, 2-2.
Okay,
excuse me.
Thank you.
Sorry, Drew.
That's okay. But, I mean, remember, the Jets also interviewed Bergevin for the job. You know, he was one of the guys that...
He's a close friend.
No, I'm thinking Mike Havland. I'm sorry.
He's a close friend of Mario Lemieux.
Cheveldayoff for the GM.
Right, I apologize. I'm thinking,
close friend
I'm thinking
of Mario Lemieux.
Mike Havland
and
is the
he's been around
coach,
the NHL. Yeah. Very popular guy. Very well-connected guy. Obviously, he's Francophone. And he is... you know, hopefully we're going to have a chance to ask Pat Hickey. We love Pat Hickey. We'd have him on for an hour if we could. But he might be the polar opposite of Pierre Gauthier.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what they need.
Right.
They need a guy who's smart, who's done it in the NHL, both as a player and as a manager, but also a guy that's going to be media friendly. And Pierre Gauthier was the media's worst nightmare, let's be honest.
Was that, I believe that was Marian Gabrick from Artem Anisimov?
Braden Holtby expected an icing call, put his hand up. There wasn't an icing call. And Anisimov retrieved the puck behind the net, fed it through to Gabrick. He put it in the slot tool.
So Anisimov has responded quite well to being chewed out.
Anisimov has been terrific,
John,
by the way, in this series.
This round,
he's been great, flying around the ice and getting points.
No argument whatsoever. We're down at Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, for the 2012 Winnipeg Gold Eyes open house. Batting practice going on behind us. Fans lining the ballpark everywhere. Come on down, say hello, enjoy a beautiful day at the ballpark. You're listening to the Illegal Kurt Hockey Show. When we come back, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette is going to join us. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live from Shaw Park, home of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program a good friend of ours from the Montreal Gazette, Pat Hickey. Pat, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Drew. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Good. You know, let's get right into it. We have a number of questions, especially about the hiring. You know, Marc Bergevin hired as the new general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Did the Habs get the right man for the job?
I think they did. You know, some people have questioned, his lack of experience, but you look at the two other candidates, the two other finalists, Pierre Maguire and Julien Brisebois, and neither one of them has anywhere near the experience that Marc Bergevin has at all levels of the game, starting with his 20 years as a player in the league. So I think that gave him a bit of an edge. He's considered a great evaluator of talent. That's one of the things where the Canadians have maybe dropped the ball in the last little while, either drafting the wrong guys or, for example, in the case of Ryan McDonagh giving up on him before he had a chance to even play a single game of pro hockey. So I think that's going to be a valuable component of the hiring process. As you're probably aware, one qualification, probably not a hard and fast one, was the ability to speak French. And Marc Bergevin is a Montreal native, fluently bilingual. Going to be a big change from the last general manager, Pierre Gauthier, who one of his nicknames was Pierre Grouchy, and was not very people-friendly. And Marc Bergevin made it very clear at the opening press conference he's a people person, cracked a lot of jokes. He, of course, when he was in his a player, known for his practical jokes. And so it's going to be a little bit of a breath of fresh air in that regard.
Pat, was this a three-horse race between Brisebois, Maguire, and Bergevin, or was it maybe did one of those quote-unquote runners-up, were they more considered for the job than one of the other ones?
I think Bergevin became it was a three-horse race for a long time. They started out, they probably looked at 20 people, and they looked at a couple of people that didn't speak French, and one of the people they were interested in was Jim Nill, the longtime assistant general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, who's turned down jobs in the past. He said he was a little more interested in this one than he was in some of the offers he had in the past, but he's got some health issues in his family, and he's very well compensated as the assistant general manager in Detroit, so he just decided to stay there. But I think he was probably in the mix at some point. There were one or two other people who took themselves out of the race. Now, whether they were really in it, Vinny Danfus is one. Again, a guy with very little experience outside, as a player in a short period of time working for the Players Association. Pat Brisson, the agent, I guess probably wasn't willing to take a pay cut. So there were other guys that were in it, but I think it came down to these three. And I think as they started doing the second interviews, it was Bergevin who stood out, and then he had a six-hour interview on last Monday, and that sort of sealed the deal right there. I think they were very impressed with what they had, and they offered him the job, and then there was another brief conversation after. I think he had a few other concerns, mostly dealing with his family after he went home to Chicago on Tuesday night. They had another phone call of half an hour to hammer out all the last details, and then he flew to Montreal.
Pat, at Mark Bergevin's press conference, he said that it's not completely necessary that they have a coach in place before the June NHL entry draft in Pittsburgh. Do you think it's realistic that Mark Bergevin doesn't need to have his coach selected by then?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that ideally you'd like to have a coach in place just as you go into the free agency period. The draft isn't that important. The coach has nothing to do with the draft. And, you know, the coaches go to the draft, but basically they're at the table, you know, sort of window dressing. What you want to do when you start looking at free agents, you want a little bit of the coach's input because you want to know what kind of, you know, what is time. You give him a little bit of time to evaluate the talent that he already has, and then see where the coach, you know, get a little input on what he thinks he might need. So I think it's probably important to have him by, you know, June 27th, 28th. The draft's not certainly not a drop-dead deadline. Now, I have a feeling they'll have somebody before then. But, you know, I think that what Bergevin was trying to do is try to take some of the pressure off. I know that for the past month people are saying, who's the general manager going to be? And it leads to all sorts of speculation. This way he gives himself a little bit of quiet time, if you will, you know, where people aren't throwing out names every day and second-guessing. And so this gives him a little bit of time to think about it and figure out where he wants to go.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. A quick update from Helsinki. The U.S. scored to make it 4-3 with just under 4 minutes to go. Canada tied it up with about a minute and a half to go. 4-all Canada-U.S. at the World Hockey Championships.
Pat, you had an interesting quote. Just back to the GM candidates for 1 second. You had an interesting quote or comment in your article in the Gazette that said, Maguire, being Pierre Maguire, described himself as the Susan Lucci of the NHL, referring to the soap opera star who finally won an Emmy Award after being passed over 18 times. I guess, and the question is, your opinion, if Pierre is that adamant or wants to get back into managing that much, is it time now for him to maybe step in as an assistant general manager, a director of player personnel, and get into it that way as opposed to jumping from broadcasting?
Well, if that's what he wants to do, yes, I think. But I don't think that's really, you know, I think he, first of all, Pierre has an ego as big as all outdoors, and I don't think he'd be willing to accept. I think he's already been in similar positions. He's turned down jobs as an assistant general manager. And so, you know, I don't think he's interested in doing that. He feels that he's ready to be a general manager, and that's the only way he'd take it. You know, an assistant general manager probably makes, I don't know, $200,000. Pierre's making over $1 million right now. And I don't think he'd be willing to take a cut of pay on spec. You know, for example, you could take a job as an assistant general manager, and 10 years from now, he could still be an assistant general manager.
Right.
So, you know, I think that he's pretty comfortable in the lifestyle he has now and feels that somebody's going to have to, you know, go one up on that to lure him away from it.
Pat, Mark Bergevin, obviously a rookie general manager. How much of an emphasis do you think he will place on hiring a head coach that has NHL experience?
You know, I think that, you know, given the experience that this team has had, I think that he'll probably be asked to find the guy with experience. You know, if you look at this team over the years, you know, they've given a bunch of guys their first opportunity to coach in the NHL. We've had Alain Vigneault, we've had Claude Julien. We've had Michel Therrien. So we've had a bunch of guys who have, you know, have had a lot of experience. That's one of the reasons they went for Jacques Martin the last time around, was they felt that it was important to get a coach with NHL experience. And, I mean, I think one of the mistakes they made was not sticking with Jacques Martin, but, you know, that's just my opinion. Obviously, the team didn't share it.
Pat, Scott Gomez, you know, you wrote in the Gazette that the most likely scenario for Gomez is to probably end up in Hamilton, where the team can pay his salary but not have a cap hit, because, you know, the Molsons have a fair amount of money, and it's one of the few teams who's able to probably do that without complaint from ownership. Do you see, is it almost a formality that the team will at least wait until the CBA, the new CBA, is signed before they really make a decision on him?
Yeah, I think they are waiting for the CBA, the new CBA, to see whether there's some sort of relief given to teams. You know, we don't know what the salary cap's going to be. We know that it is going to go up on June 26th or 27th, and teams have been told business as usual. But I think most teams are smart enough to realize that while the CBA is going up, it may go down again, just like we saw the last time around. So there might still be changes to come, and teams will be prudent about that. Last time, of course, we saw a 25% reduction in all the salaries. We just don't know what's going to happen this time around. There might be a move to get rid of guaranteed contracts. It'll be interesting to see all these guys with long-term contracts. You know, how many court cases that brings up if they do that.
Oh, God.
But I think they'll wait and see what happens. Last time around, there was an amnesty for buyouts, and there might be something similar this time around. So they'll wait and see. But the one thing we can definitely be sure of is that Scott Gomez will not be in a Canadiens uniform next year.
Pat, everyone in Montreal knows that TK Subban and Carey Price are both RFAs. Are these negotiations going to be contentious at all, do you think? Or are these negotiations and contracts going to, go fairly smoothly and the contracts will get done, pretty
easily? I think that the Price contract will get done pretty smoothly. I think the price is probably established somewhere in the $5 million range, 4 or 5 year contract, somewhere in that range. Subban will be a different situation. I think Subban may be the situation that Price was in 2 years ago. He's not eligible for arbitration yet. He's a restricted free agent. That means he has a little less bargaining power. But you're in a very strange situation here because, the team has a little bit of leverage, but at the same time, you don't want to upset the guy. So, there's a lot of talk that they have to sign him to a long-term contract. I think you'll see similar to what Price got a couple of years ago, where he'll get a 1 or 2 year deal. The interesting situation is, he may be your best defenseman right now. He's certainly the guy who gets the most minutes and tremendous upside. This guy's only going to get better. And you're paying Andrei Markov, who's still not 100%. You're paying him almost $6 million. You're paying Josh Georges $4 million. So you're going to have to be fair with him. As I say, I think you'll probably see him sign for 1 year, $2.5 million, maybe $3 million.
Pat, we'll let you go on this last question. The NHL entry draft coming up, as we spoke about in Pittsburgh at the end of June. Habs have the third overall pick. Who do you see the team looking for as their target?
Well, I think that a third is an interesting spot because it means that, there are anywhere from 2 to 5 players that you want. They're guys that have been there all season, Yakupov, Grigorenko, and Murray, and now you've got Forsberg getting in there, and Galchenyuk looks like he's healthy again. So you've got 5 guys there, and I think the Canadiens' decision is made a little easier in the fact that 2 of those guys are going to be gone by the time they pick. They say, again, they'll go with the best available player. I think it's important for them to try to find somebody who can give them some help right away. And unfortunately, that's one of the things where the Canadiens have, haven't really been on the ball, is that they like to bring guys along slowly. The last time they drafted a guy and had him play immediately was Peter Svoboda in 1984. So, I think that one of the things, they have to try to find some guy who's ready to play right away and just live with him. If you look at Stamkos and Tavares and even somebody, going back a few years, Joe Thornton, these are guys that all struggled a little bit in their first year of pro, but they learned things. Sagan's another example of a guy like that. And I think that it's important to try to find somebody who can help them right away.
Well, we will wait and find out coming up in a couple of months. Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I'm available anytime for you guys.
Appreciate that,
Pat. Thanks a lot,
Pat. Thank you very much.
Right.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Shaw Park for the Goldeyes 2012 Open House on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. He just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview or any of the program, it is available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. We're down at Shaw Park for the Gold Eyes open house. Beautiful day, crowds everywhere, people everywhere in the concourse. Still time for you to come on down and join us here at Shaw Park for the 2012 Gold Eyes open house. An update from Helsinki, Finland. The game is over. Jack Johnson scored for the United States to beat Team Canada 5-4 in the World Hockey Championships. Jack Johnson with the goal, the game-winning goal. Jim Slater of the Winnipeg Jets and Team USA was named Player of the Game.
Shout out to Jimmy Slater, member of the GST line. Good for him for winning Player of the Game. And he's an assistant captain. You know, that American team is
making
good.
Making himself some money right now.
You've got Paul Stastny and Bobby Ryan, and we mentioned Max Pacioretty of the Montreal Canadiens. You've got, obviously, Jack Johnson, Cam Fowler. You know, a lot of good players on that team.
It's
that
interesting there, as you quickly get in there, it's interesting. Fowler played, you know, American guys. Fowler played in the CHL. Bobby Ryan played in the CHL. You mentioned, I think Pacioretty played in college or for Michigan, I believe. But it's interesting. A lot of those American guys were played through the Canadian system.
Yep. New format to the World Hockey Championships this year. It used to be four pools of four teams. This year they went to two pools of eight. So with
Wow.
You know, that's
that is revolutionary.
I was going to say revolutionary, Drew.
So what does that change? I don't know.
You know what? If you had read the show yesterday, I send you out the show plan. I say, if you have any changes you'd like to make to the show plan, you know, send me back some feedback.
Drew, you...
I don't hear a word from Richard over here, king of all Illegal Curve in his own mind. And now, on air, he starts to throw me under the bus.
Wow, Drew, first of all...
That specific point was not in the show plan, though.
Had you read it, I sent you the new format. You could have read it.
No, you sent the link of the article.
Exactly.
What did Richie Drew do? Drew's assuming we read any form of communication that comes to us.
Yeah,
we read your emails.
I have blocked on my email.
Paul Edmonds, are you willing to replace these two on a permanent basis and join me?
Probably somewhere in the middle of September.
Okay. Somewhere in the middle of September.
I'm a little bit busy from sort of Monday night on.
Okay, sounds reasonable. Fine. Yeah. We'll keep that in mind if we can't smooth this thing over by September. Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, joins us back here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Great day here, boys.
Oh, great.
It's just fabulous. I mean, fabulous weather.
I've seen the field is probably in the best shape I've ever seen it winter. Over the years.
Well,
not a lot of winter kill.
No, screen.
Don't forget, the team won't open up here until the 29th.
Sure.
So, and I can tell you right now, we were over 6,000 tickets sold for the home opener as of early this past week. And opening day tickets were flying out of here today. We'll be sold out. We will be sold out for the opener on
Terrific.
The 29th, so that'll be great.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely. And there's really not. It's one of those, you know, baseball has so many games, you know, in the majors, 162. Gold Eyes play 100 games.
Yeah.
There's something so special about opening day. You always get a little bit of an extra burst in your step when you see opening day, especially in the majors, where it's sort of a good sign that winter is over at that point. And same thing here, with the Gold Eyes. Obviously winter generally lasts a little bit longer in Winnipeg.
Exactly.
But when the Gold Eyes have opening day and they have the open house, you know that we've reached into the beautiful summer months here in Winnipeg.
What a little bit of difference some weather can make, though, because
Absolutely.
Last year the season opened early. And the Gold Eyes opened up at home, May 12th. It was brutally cold, 2 degrees Celsius, I think, at game time. The next day was a Friday, the 3rd. We got snowed out, played a doubleheader on Saturday, and finally on Sunday sun to come out. This year will be the 29th, and presumably the weather will be, we'll be into the teens, if anything, at game time, and maybe hopefully into the low 20s.
So. Now, the Gold Eyes are on the road for the first 2 weeks of the season, is that
It'll
right?
It'll end up being about 15 or 16 days. Here's what happens, just real quick. Monday, Tuesday night, St. Paul's in town for preseason. Friday's the U of W game here, and then the Gold Eyes will work out on Saturday, head down to St. Paul, play exhibition Sunday, Monday in St. Paul. Then they'll play in Kansas City on Tuesday. And then they get down to Amarillo and let her kind of fly in Amarillo for a 9-game swing through Texas to start the regular season.
So that game in Kansas City, is that also a preseason game?
It's a preseason. So what they're doing is, instead of the long shot from Winnipeg to Amarillo, Texas, the team's kind of working their way down with exhibition a little bit.
If they want to go on a road trip with Ezzy, He has a snoring problem, so he won't get any sleep. But he's great entertainment.
Right. Okay. No, but Paul, in all honesty, last year we had you on during the open house. We weren't able to come down, I believe probably because we were fighting in the parking lot outside of the studio. But, you know, this is my first open house, and I got to say, this is awesome. Yeah. You know, there's groups coming through, getting a tour of the ballpark. Obviously, the weather cooperated, and it is beautiful. I'm going to put my suntan lotion on in a second.
Can you put your shirt back on while you're out?
I was going to say, as he's got his face painted and he's got his balloons. So,
yeah. No, but it is awesome, and you know, and we're also looking forward to getting batting practice in, you know, after the show.
No,
but
Ezzy, you're the ball, and we're going to be hitting you with bats. Yeah, that's right.
Was that
difference.
Part of the deal? Did we work in a little BP for you guys?
I thought so. Didn't we negotiate that?
I told you before, Ezzy has a terrible pull swing, and everything goes foul on the left field line.
Okay. They're going to have to raise the netting up another 20 feet.
Step in the bucket a little bit, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Good. Right. No. The Texas teams, you mentioned going down to Amarillo for the first to start the season. Last year, we didn't play those teams in the American Association.
No. So. A little bit more interlocking this year. I think it's good. Now, you know, I know you guys are football fans, too, and it's akin to the NFL schedule, where you might not see every team every year, but you will see some of those teams from some of those other divisions, and then you might travel to some of those teams in some of those other divisions. But over the course of about a 3 or 2 year sample, you'll have seen everybody in your ballpark. So this year, you'll see Amarillo. The goal is you'll see Amarillo, El Paso, and Laredo, but won't see Grand Prairie this year. But you'll also see Amarillo up here. Maybe next year you do a swing where you see Amarillo and El Paso, but you factor in Grand Prairie in there again. But maybe Grand Prairie and El Paso come up here next year. So it'll be kind of akin to the NFL-type schedule. It's just too hard for travel, and you want to play most of your games for sure within your own division or geographically within the first two divisions, which would be the North and Central.
We've come a long way from the last years of the Northern League, where there's only five teams coming through the through Winnipeg, you know, and you've seen the same teams five times,
thankfully,
you know, minimum.
I don't mind telling you, it crushed the interest here.
Yeah.
It crushed our fan base. It crushed season tickets. It crushed mini packs, and it's taken a long hard road for people in the front office to work to get it back. But the biggest thing was to get into a 13-team league, as the Gold Eyes did with moving over with Gary and Fargo last year as well, and getting into that American Association.
And, of course, you bring back some former rivals like St. Paul, who had left the Northern League a number of years ago.
And the Sioux.
Right, of course, Sioux Falls and Sioux City.
A lot of people forget that when you are able to travel in the summer, I saw countless Gold Eyes fans over the years in Duluth, St. Paul, Sioux City, Sioux Falls, Fargo, because you're able to travel and make it a family holiday and go down and do some of the other sights and sounds of those areas, but also factor in and sprinkle in some Gold Eyes games. You weren't able to do that when you're running back and forth from Kansas City and Chicagoland every second week. It's just too far to go. So this has brought that regional element back into it, and it's been really a boon for the organization, and I think for the American Association to have those four teams that came in from the Northern League and joined up.
And Paul, obviously last year the Gold Eyes won the Northern Division. And this year, moving ahead, what are some of maybe the changes on the Gold Eyes and some of the players that they've brought in that, you know, fans should get excited about?
Well, I think you've got John Weber back this year, and you could call him the de facto captain here, I guess, if you wanted to, but he really is the straw that serves the drink in the clubhouse on the field. And through his connections with Mexico and AAA baseball, he's brought in and he's been able to get Rick to bring in Yarendel DeCaster, who will play some third base, another AAA, another guy that Mexico, also Chris Roberson. I think that this 1-9 batting lineup will be much vaunted, provided that over the 100 games, you don't have anybody picked up, you don't get anybody hurt for an extended period, or you don't have C both. The question marks for me will not be in the starting rotation or certainly positionally, and 1-9, it will be the bullpen, because there's no Aaron Hartsock and no Jamie Vermillier this year. That was your 8th and 9th inning guys, respectively, and I don't know who's going to fill those roles, but they've got some arms here. So that's part of the intrigue of training camp here going forward this week.
But if you're going to have holes in any part of a team, you'd probably rather it be the bullpen than the starting rotation or the batting lineup.
I think it's probably a little bit easier to find an arm than it is a big bat.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, as Rick likes to term it, and I'll quote him, boat race each other for that big bat sometime in June, when you have all these independent teams fighting across North America to get that guy, because everybody could use one of those guys, especially if somebody gets picked up, right?
Sure.
So I think there's enough arms. Rick's kind of taken the approach where he's signed enough guys, thrown enough at it against the wall, see what sticks, to try to find the rules for the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning guys.
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a great year here at Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes as they begin to get underway, get the preparations going for the season opener coming up in Amarillo and the home opener at the end of May back here at Shaw Park. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, every game, of course, here on TSN 1290 starting Monday night. You got the pipes all ready to go?
La, 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 la.
Yeah, exactly. Some Ricola in the meantime.
Yeah.
Until Monday, you should be good to go.
Real quick, I wanted to bring
Coyotes.
Up Phoenix Coyotes and this series with Nashville. I think it's over. But a question that I really want to pose to you guys that my 9-year-old brought up. Very impressed with Mike Smith and how he's been playing goal. And, of course, they've had a real big study at school about the Olympics. So he brought up the question to me. I can't take credit for this. So I'll leave it to you guys to try to answer or decipher. With Brodeur as old as he is, with Luongo and a lot of question marks where he might be next year, when we go to Sochi as an Olympic nation, and if there are NHLers involved in Sochi, does Mike Smith maybe get some consideration to be one of your goalies?
I'll tell you what. When we come back after these commercial messages, we'll tackle that question and we'll tackle the Coyotes-Predators series.
Okay.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve
Thanks,
Hockey
guys.
Show. We're live at Shaw Park for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes Open House. You're listening to TSN 1290.